Hello, I'm Katie Steckles.
And I'm Peter Ollett. Hi, Katie, what's today's mathematical object?
So today's object that we're going to be talking about out loud with no reference images of any kind is the sort of 3D wooden puzzles. You know, the kind of thing that you've probably got for Christmas if you've ever told anyone you like maths, right?
Yes.
So those kind of 3D wooden puzzles. And in order to discuss this, I've brought along Grant Sanderson off of the 3 Blue 1 Brown. So welcome, Grant.
Thanks for having me, Katie.
Yeah, so I guess this is sort of Grant's topic, I guess, that he's kind of chosen to talk about. So tell us why we're going to talk about 3D wooden puzzles.
So this actually cuts very deep for me. I've collected 3D wood puzzles since I was young. Actually, I think the first one I got, I was on a family trip to New Zealand, and there was there's a very common theme to these puzzles where you might have these six-piece ones where pairs of pieces go on the three coordinate axes, and there's variations. And now you referenced, you know, if you like math, people will give you these ones for Christmas. I feel like there is the cheap version of these that's the like clearly mass produced, like pulverized sawdust that's been reshaped into the pieces kind of stuff. And then a whole other side of it is the woodworking aspect of it and like the specific woods that go in and like some of the ones that are my more like prized possessions. It's as much because of the like the fine woodwork as it is because of the actual shape and interest of the puzzle. Again, great fodder for a podcast to like describe and be take a look at the zebra wood on the like corners of this one. But
I mean, it's sort of reminding me like one of the very early episodes of this we did was about chalk. like the object was a stick of chalk.
Yeah.
And we talked about like the reasons why mathematicians love chalk. And we got into that, you know, like the really posh chalk that some people get that's like really high quality.
Yeah.
And it feels like the same kind of distinction that people are like, oh, they've got the good chalk, you know, there is a whole aspect to these puzzles that actually like people have put real craftsmanship into it and done, you know, good quality materials that make it also a nicer object to look at and also probably nicer to handle as well, I guess.
Yeah, the handling, that is true because it just feels more girthy, I guess. So I've got three that I brought here, which I guess, as opposed to show and tell, this is purely tell. And I don't, the very first one, I'm going to hold this up so both of you can see it. And I think maybe all three of us can try to struggle to describe what exactly this shape is to the poor audience member who's like driving on their commute now and like we're going to overload the GPU of their brain and cause them to crash. But
should we try and describe the general principle is that you've got a bunch of often very similar shaped bits of wood which all kind of lock together.
Exactly.
And the puzzle is locking them together or unlock, is it building the shape or unbuilding the shape?
Yeah,
I'm never quite sure.
Exactly, it's building the shape. So in this case, I feel like the most clever puzzles, all of the pieces are identical to each other. And I think when you can pull that off, that's really clever to be able to do something that gives you an interesting shape, even if it's out of pieces that all look the same. Now sometimes, so the one that we're looking at here, it's got like a sort of dodecahedron symmetry, but it itself is not a dodecahedron. Like the pieces.
Much spikier.
It's very spiky, yeah. And
But it's not kind of a like in a regular way, not like a stellated dodecahedron. It's kind of, the spikes are almost asymmetrical, but they kind of, they have a rotational symmetry, I guess, in the way they're arranged.
Yeah, I literally don't know how to describe this. Like each piece, if you look at it head on, it looks like a rhombus from one axis. So it almost looks like each piece is this rhombus prism. Except it's not exactly a rhombus prism because that would have, if you imagine like holding that up, the sides are flat parallel to the ground. But if you tilt each one of them up, so you sort of skew the rhombus prism, that'll give you the individual pieces.
Like a parallelepiped prism rhombus thing.
Yeah.
I guess. I mean, a parallelepiped is that shape, right? It's just, this is a very long, thin one.
It is. Each one is a parallelepiped. So that's perfect. Except it's slightly more complicated because it's like the convex hull of the shape would be a parallelepiped, but actually on each end, it's got a little, it's like you've carved out part of it to make space on the inside and they all basically hug each other.
Okay. Yeah. So Grant's got one of the pieces out now and it's like almost like a hook on the end that there's like this sort of chunk missing that's taken out at an angle, but it's a kind of triangular prism with this little hook bit that makes it into like a rhombus cross section at the end.
Yeah,
but the hooked round bits are not obvious when the thing's together, I think.
Absolutely not. Yeah.
I mean, I'm assuming they're integral to how it stays together, right?
Yeah.
And in fact, one of the hard things about it, even just taking out the first piece. So from the puzzle side of it, I also love this when like even just taking out the first piece becomes difficult. So most pieces have like two teeth on each side. And some of these puzzles, in order for them to work, you have to have a single key piece that's a little bit different from the others, just because otherwise they're like, they're locked together in a way that could never become unlocked. And the most clever ones are if you can keep them all completely identical. So this one can't quite achieve that, but I think it's worth highlighting because the symmetry is really clever. And then the beginnings of the puzzle, like as soon as you take out one of the pieces, you can start sliding the other ones to make some room. And even as you slide them, it's not really clear how to take that first one out. So I think it's a very beautiful shape that I simply don't know how to describe. And if you guys can figure out a better way to do that, all would be well. But
yeah, I mean, does it have like a name? Like maybe not if the shape has a name, but does the puzzle have a name? Or does it just arrive without a box? Or
it wasn't out of box. This was at like a farmer's market type situation where it was like a woodworker who had like a stand and like made these. And I was young enough, I maybe wasn't organized to like keep notes on like, oh, and do you have a name for this one? And like, how should I record it and all of that?
Right.
So instead it's, I kind of have no details on the origin other than like a particular stand at like this market in Portland, Oregon, many years ago.
I mean, I like the idea that people are just kind of doing guerrilla, creating beautiful geometric objects. And like not even thinking about what it is or writing down what the shape's called or anything. Just like, here's a cool thing, enjoy.
And they're not like math nerds as math nerds. I would actually fully expect that the individual making it like is not necessarily, like a math teacher or someone where that's another part of what he engages with. It just, it's like the craftsmanship of puzzles for what they are. I can show you a different one.
Yeah, well, I imagine there's a lot of geometry in making something like that, right? You need to be very precise about the shapes and the angles and all of that kind of stuff. So there presumably will be maths involved somehow in the way it's made. But
100%.
Maybe that kind of intuitive maths that people do when they're good at that.
Yeah, the Escher style where you like kind of reinvent what the mathematicians might have done, but like even better because you have like the craft that you're trying to make, and then you engage with like genuinely deep math in order to even get there, even if you don't have the jargon to put to it.
And the thing that I was struck as you were playing with that is that it moved very nicely, and it's because my experience with these, and like I hadn't realized there was a hierarchy to them, but you often find these things and they're basically a little bit awkward, and eventually the solution is you've just got to push it a bit harder than you think you should, and oof, and it goes into place, and you think, and then like my son is 9 and can't do it because he's not strong enough to do the extra bit of pushing, and it's just a bit rubbish as an experience. But that looked much nicer to be playing with.
I think that comes down to the, like, you know, how well sanded the wood is to some extent. Because the ones you're
talking about with the craftsmanship.
If it's not quite precise, right, there's a little bit of give there, and then there's some, like, roughness to it. That experience you're describing is terrible. You're like, oh, that's the move you're supposed to do, but you got to, like, shove it. But you don't want, certainly if you like have a kid playing with it, you don't want them to think like shoving will ever be the answer, because they're not like delicate, but I don't want them bashed around, right? And so you kind of want to be able to say you never will force it. Like if it's the right move, you'll feel that it's the right move. It glides when you want
like
it to glide.
When you go to an escape room.
Yes.
In an escape room, they often say, if you would have to be strong in order to do the thing you're doing, right, then you shouldn't be doing it.
Yes.
Like, you know, if a small child could not do it, then it's not part of the escape room. Yeah.
Well put. In that same vein, I guess, so there's, man, I got a whole pile I could grab out, but I've limited myself to 3 that I'll show. But so the kind that might be in the stocking stuffer, so the one I'm holding up here is a very classic one where there's 6 pieces. And you imagine they come in pairs. Each pair, one pair sits on the x-axis, one pair sits on the y-axis, one pair sits on the z-axis. And the pairs together, if you imagine like how they sit, let's say on the x-axis, their shadow on the yz plane would be a rectangle. And that rectangle is maybe a bit longer in the z direction than the y direction. And then similarly, the pair that sits on the z-axis, its shadow sits on the xy plane. And in that case, it's, I think, you know, like the x-axis one would be a little bit longer. This is a style that you see all over the place because the way that those pairs kind of hug together is nice. And then you have an empty space in the middle that you can do various things with as a puzzle crafter. And just looking at the outside, you kind of don't know if it's going to be one of the very trivial ones where there's just like a pretty straightforward way, you kind of like take them out, you see them and they all like naturally fit. Or if there's, from a puzzle perspective, something much more interesting going on. And the reason I like this one is it looks like those simple ones from the outside. It's bigger and it's girthier, and it's got like each of the six pieces is its own like nice kind of wood, which again is like a whole other component to what makes these fun. But the puzzle of it, it's not at all trivial. Like in order to, I'm not even sure I can remember how to do this, but
yeah, I'm kind of thinking because it sort of looks like three cuboids that have all intersected with each other, right? It looks just like, when it's solved, it's just like three cuboids that are all centered at the same spot but pointing in different directions.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of imagining that each of the pieces is like a square bracket, I guess, that sort of the two square brackets face each other and clamp around one of the other cuboids.
Yes.
But there's no way that it can physically be that, right? Because they'd all have to intersect each other at the same time. So there's obviously something more subtle going on. And it looks like from what you're doing, you can sort of push one of them across a little bit, which lets you move one of the other ones up a little bit. And it kind of,
yeah,
like it has a sequence to it, I guess.
So in this particular one, the one degree of freedom you have at the beginning, you can slide one piece. And then that lets you slide one of the perpendicular pieces that then lets you slide one of the ones that's in another axis. But even then you can't take any of them off. You've like slid three things and nothing is removable. And you have to slide that second one again, slide that first one again. And now just one of them is offset. But then that gives you another degree of freedom at like a fourth one that you can slide, then a fifth one you can slide. And then that third one you can push a little bit further. And after like seven different moves, you still haven't taken a single piece out. They've just been sliding. But after all of that, it like finally allows one of them to come out and you can take a look at its shape.
Yeah, it's very much not just the bracket shape. It's got like the end bit has got a shape to it as well. Yeah.
It's like the bracket is a perfect description. So they are like a square bracket, but then the innards of that square bracket, there's going to be either some some like units taken out or some units added. And then the way that all of those compose with each other on the invisible inside is the whole puzzle. And you can't see the way they interlock on that invisible inside, which is like, as you're taking it apart, just taking it apart is a fun puzzle. And then once you're putting it together, you see all the insides. You're like, how the heck do these, like, it's very mind-bending to try to even like wrap your mind around it. In fact, I'm hesitant.
Are those ones all identical as well? Or are they
not at all? So this one, they're all different, which is one of the charms. Yeah. So like it's the very clever ones, they'll all be identical. This is clever in a different way because it's like there's more information to the whole puzzle as opposed to being like the craft is clever because of the being able to pull it off with the symmetry. In this case, the act of solving it and taking it apart is where all the information and fun is. And so it fits that different category.
Just imagining looking at those six pieces lying on a table and being like, right, what am I doing?
You have no idea.
Can't even imagine how you'd fit them together.
No, in fact, I'm not taking it all apart right now because I'm like, I don't know if I can remember how, and I don't want that to eat up my afternoon.
You want to video yourself taking it apart so that you can rewind it.
Yeah. That's sort of the way it either takes the fun out of it or it makes it systematic depending on your point of view. But if you have one of these, you almost want to learn it the way you like learn a musical piece, like just a little bit at a time where you take out one piece and then you put it back in. You take out two pieces and you put them back in. And then you can get that muscle memory on like knowing where they all are, which maybe then you're robbing yourself of the puzzle of just having the six blank pieces staring down there and being like, what do you do with this? And then the very last piece that I have for you, I like this because you could, even before having the puzzle, you could ask the meta puzzle to someone at like a cocktail party where you say like, can you construct for me a physical puzzle that has three pieces that is like not obvious how to solve? And then even more as a challenge, those three pieces should be identical to each other and it should somehow nevertheless be an interesting puzzle, even though it only has three pieces. And even if you kind of hint that you're going to do this in three dimensions in some way, so it's not just like a jigsaw that has only three pieces, it's still not clear that should be possible, where one, you have three that like once they're together they hold together well, they don't just fall apart. It's not obvious how to put them together, like can you make that the case and then make them all identical with all of that. And so for the simplicity and the like, you know, economy of ideas, I think this one's vies for being one of the more clever. So in terms of what we're looking at, again, you have three pieces. Each one of them sits, you can think one sits on the x-axis, one sits on the y-axis, one sits on the z-axis. And each piece, from this perspective, looks like it's just a what do you call an elongated cube? Just a square prism.
Yeah, I guess.
A tower.
Yeah.
Just a normal.
Yeah.
Just rectangular.
I was going to say a cuboid, but I guess you specifically mean one with a square cross section. Yeah. So
something that's like 1 by 1 by 3, like a 1 by 1 by 3 thing is what they look like.
Yeah. What I was going to say is it's just the net of a hypercube without the lid on, right? It's
okay. Yeah.
Obviously.
Great. Yeah. Of course. Yeah. The net of a hypercube without a lid. Perfect description. Now, of course, they can't all be like 1 by 1 by 3. Cuboids, because in that middle space they would all be overlapping and intersecting, so they have to, at least a third of that middle space like has to be chopped out. So to take it apart, and this one doesn't require strength, but it also doesn't quite, it's not just like naturally sliding out. But I can hold up each one of the pieces to you here, where you see for that 1 by 1 by 3 tower, like the middle part is mostly vacant, except it's got like a wedge piece in there, and all three of them it's
identical. Looks now like two cubes with a bar in between them, but the bar is at the corners, isn't it? It's not in the middle. Are they all the same?
They're all completely identical, and so that's the cool part here.
Nice.
And so that seem like it shouldn't be the case, right?
That's no
good. Yeah,
how is it possible? And then if you give this to someone, if I went and I said, all right, like Peter, I'm gonna like mail you these three pieces, right? And you take these three pieces out of the package that arrives, and you've seen what it's supposed to look like, the net of a hypercube without the cap, like you know what it's supposed to be. It's actually still pretty hard to, I mean, it can only be so hard because it's three pieces, so you have, you know, more limited degrees of freedom. But I think most people you hand this to, it's certainly not an obvious way to put them together, and it's a very fun little like plaything puzzle to try to figure out how to do it. And what's nice is that it all has to happen in one move. Like it can't look like taking piece one, connecting it to piece two, and then taking piece three and putting it on that. It's like everything has to happen in this. It's like a chord or something, right? It's like all three have to do like the same thing at the same time. And if they aren't working in concert, then it's not gonna go.
Yeah, it kind of feels like there's a symmetry, and you almost have to like have obviously three different hands at the same time and hold them all and just kind of turn them all at the same time, and they kind of lock together. Totally. Like I can kind of imagine something like that, but I've definitely had the experience of having a puzzle where I can see that that's what's needed, but I can't kind of get it into the right shape.
The dexterity.
I imagine it's very satisfying.
Yes. No, as we say this, I'm obviously toying around with it, and I kind of forget how does this go? All right, well, for the remaining time, you're going to have my divided attention while I... Pretty sure I can. There's only so much that you can do, is the thing.
Our plan has worked to get Grant to take apart one of his puzzles and can't put back together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
On the dexterity point, there's definitely someone here where that I have in the collection that it's like as much this game of trying to, you know, you wish you had four hands, each of which with 20 fingers or something. Yeah. One of them has the name The Lunatic. And it's a little bit more in the category of like the like cheap wood, you can like buy it online, not at a farmer's market kind of thing. But it is a clever piece, but it's one that you just like, you just have to be like holding so many different things in the right place before you can get the key movement in. And so in that way, I think it maybe kind of robs a little bit because you want the puzzle. Oh, here we go. I got it. You ready to see it go together? So I've like carefully arranged the three pieces in the right spot. And then in a way that will satisfy zero podcast listeners, but hopefully
all
three just like slide in the simultaneous movement to get in position.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. It's like along all three axes at the same time. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And once you do it, you have the feeling like, oh, it must have been this way. Like it was so symmetric from the start that of course all three had to move in concert because they all look the same. Like neither one of them should have had preferential treatment from the beginning. But even then it's still quite hard to see how to do it.
Yeah, I guess there is that kind of logic to a lot of these that, like, even if you don't know what it is you have to do, you can kind of make those kinds of deductions and say, you know, because these pieces are the same as each other, they're interchangeable, but then also, you know, that tells you things about how they're going to fit together and that sort of thing.
Completely, yeah.
Yeah. I guess, like, for me, a lot of the appeal of this kind of thing is that it is really tactile. And it's the sort of thing where you could almost do it without even concentrating on what you were doing. You just kind of sat fiddling with some pieces and then you suddenly just, oh, I've solved it. Mm-hmm. You know, that occasionally happens, but Like, there is definitely a kind of a level of mathematical thinking that maybe people who aren't mathematical might still be happy to pick something like this up and play with it, that they don't kind of think of it as doing maths, but actually, you know, there's a lot of spatial orientation and thinking about, you know, 3D space and that kind of thing that I guess appeals to mathematicians in some way.
Yeah, I mean, yeah,
I was trying to find it when we were getting ready for this recording, but I think it must be in my office at work. But I have this very nice old box, and when you open it, there's no idea what's in it. And then when you open it, it's got, I think, four of these type of puzzles in different sections. And it came to me from my granddad's house, when they were sort of distributing his stuff. And my granddad was not a mathematician. He worked in, Sheffield is very famous for steel. So he worked in manufacturing steel. And we did a previous episode where he had an old maths book from, I think, when he had to do some metallurgy. He must have needed to know some maths for it. So we have this like a maths applied maths book, which is quite nice. But one of the other things that I've got is this set of old puzzles. And listening to you, I always sort of think, oh, these things are fine, but they're just a bit hard work, or I've seen kids struggle with them and things. I'm now, because these things are crew, right? I've got loads of these around, and I'm going to go away and go through them and work out which ones I have that are actually nice and which ones I have that are the cheap rubbish ones that I can perhaps get rid of. And, you know, no, that's good.
Yeah, they are very collectible, aren't they? Like, you hear these stories about, I don't know if it was like Martin Gardner or David Singmaster or the sort of giants of recreational maths that have these. I think maybe it was David Singmaster had this house full of puzzles. And, you know, anyone who had the opportunity to visit, you could just walk around for hours and hours looking at all these objects. But like, yeah, it's the sort of thing that there will be similarities between them, and you'll get like different versions of the same thing with variations. But there is a real art to it, right? It's a craft to sort of producing, like, not only things that are satisfying and fun to solve, but also that look nice and are well made.
It's a little bit like books in that way sometimes, where people sometimes have like really finely bound books. And on the one hand, it's like, it's about the content and, you know, could work just as well as, you know, reading on the Kindle app of your phone or something. But on the other hand, the physicality and like the nice craftsmanship of the physical object, it makes it displayable. Yeah. And then it also like sets the tone once you are engaging with the content of it in a different way from if it was the same puzzle, you know, the same ideas, but just arranged in a less thought out medium.
Yeah, it's almost like the you know, backgrounds of Zoom calls that, or videos that people do where they have all the leather books to make themselves look leather. Sure. Like, surely they just need a whole shelf full of excellent looking wooden puzzles, and that's even better.
Yeah,
that's giving me ideas, actually.
It also, I think it isn't, I think there is an interesting mathematical problem, a sort of combinatorics problem. I'm sure I've seen written up somewhere, and that might be an old Martin Gardner, I can't remember, with the middle one that you showed us, where it's basically a rectangular, whatever we called that, prism, where some of the bits in the middle were missing. And you can divide this thing up into a grid, and then there are however many different combinations of things that you can take out of the middle, but it still ends up as one solid piece. And then some of those are useful for puzzles in different ways, aren't they?
So I mean, it almost feels like a 3D version of the sort of 15, you know, the slidey puzzle where you've got 15 things in a 16 square and there's one hole and you have to sort of shunt things around until you get things to where you want them. But it's like a 3D version of that. You're moving the space rather than...
Or the sort of rush hour sliding blocks when you were sort of saying, well, you've got to move this one across to move that one up, to move that one back, to then, and eventually one releases. It's like that.
Yeah, I mean, it almost reminds me of, I've forgotten the name of it, which is obviously great, but there's a puzzle that someone talked about at the David Singmaster event, because I think he might have done some work on it, that you've got like a series of linked rings and there's like rods that go upwards. Can you remember what it's called,
It's Peter? Called, I think it's just called Chinese rings, and it's one of these problematically named objects. Yeah. But yeah.
And it's kind of essentially the idea is that you can, it's almost like a binary thing. So you can do the first one, you can undo it from what it's attached to, and that allows you to undo the second one. But then you can't undo the third one, so you have to redo the first one. And then, you know, there's like a whole sequence that you have to follow to get the whole thing unlinked. And unless you do it in exactly the right order, you'll never get there. And it's sort of the puzzle is sort of working out what that order is, and the sort of physical motion of playing with it. But someone literally did a talk about it. They brought one for everyone in the room, and it was either the most brilliant or the most terrible idea ever, because everyone was just sat there doing this puzzle for the whole duration of the talk. But actually, it was really nice to have a thing to actually play with and understand the stuff they were talking about. And obviously, there's a whole load of nice maths behind it. But it kind of feels like almost that you've got this sort of sequence that you derive. And as you're saying, you get the first bit and then you're like, OK, I know that I need to do that bit. But then what do I do next? And you kind of build from there. It's like a metaphor for all problem solving and maths, right? That's how we do anything.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's in the same category of sort of physical puzzles that are almost logic puzzles, but like the logic comes from the physical space. You know, you get these sort of birthday presents where it's like, oh, it's a bottle of wine, but you have to unloop this bit of string and pull the wood out so you can get the wine out of the thing before you can drink it. And it's hilarious. But like, you know, it is a kind of physical puzzle, and it's the sort of thing that I think, yeah, it does appeal to a really broad range of people, I guess, because anyone can just sit and faff with an object until it comes apart. I obviously don't mean to like talk down the skill of solving these puzzles, as anyone can faff with an object until it falls apart. But I think that, you know, there is a it's an approachableness, I guess, that that maybe maths doesn't have in the same kind of way.
And it's sort of fascinating that even watching it come together doesn't necessarily help you get it
apart.
You know, yeah. Watching it come apart doesn't help you get it back together.
Also, much like doing math, where sometimes you're fiddling around with a problem and then you find the answer and you're like, I still don't feel like I understand why that's the answer.
Yeah, I did something. I don't know what it was I did, but it worked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you ever considered, making YouTube videos about your physical objects? Putting these things on the screen.
Sounds like a lot of effort though, right? Yeah.
I can recommend. It's a fine platform. Yes.
It's a perennial thing. Is this 8 or 9 seasons that we've done? Mm-hmm. And at some point we had this idea for, let's try and do a podcast where we describe things to people who can't see them.
I realize, because this is the first time I've been on here, like obviously I'm like delighting and like commenting on that, but this must be literally every episode, and like any listener is like very tired of like the hackneyed commentary around.
I think some episodes more than others. So we've definitely had kind of very geometrical or shape-based things that have run up against this. But I guess the object doesn't have to be a real object. And that's, I guess, the nice twist on this is sometimes the object is just a notional thing that you can't even draw a picture of. So, you know, we should do more episodes like that, Peter. Just,
we do have some where we struggle to think what the image for the object is for the episode is going to be, because it's just an abstract concept. Mm. Yeah.
So, as Grant has said, YouTube is an excellent place to see great things online, in particular Grant's videos. So you've got a channel, right, Grant?
That's right. I run a YouTube channel called 3 Blue 1 Brown.
Yeah, sorry.
Oh, good.
I've lost it. Yeah, it's all you need to know, right? That's the...
Yes. Yeah. And we're both findable online, for example, places like Mastodon and Blue Sky. If you search our names, Peter Rollett and Katie Steckles, you'll probably find us.
So both Peter and I blog at aperiodical.com, which is where you can find more episodes of the podcast.
And we're both members of the Finite Group, which you can find on Patreon. And some members of the Finite Group listen to episodes of this season being recorded.
And if you want to get in touch with us, if you've got any suggestions for objects that you would like to see featured in future episodes, you can email objects@aperiodical.com.
The music is Funk Game Loop by Kevin McLeod, licensed under Creative Commons.
I like the idea of not editing any of this and letting the end of your episode be like the very awkward conversation around how to end it, and then just like cut to music without anything conclusive.
I mean, we have so much of that, like that content is hours and hours of that.